This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 49. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of field settings. Ian Pond shares another fast bowling tip with us, and as usual, we answer your questions for this week. Well, David, you've been on a bit of a break after your cricket season. Have you been letting loose lately, eating whatever you can?
Well, you know, I don't like to look at it like that. You know, I don't want to see it as something that's a chore that I have to do. I enjoy training and I enjoy healthy eating and cooking and all that side of thing. So I don't really see it as having a break from those things. But yeah, I did go away for a few days, and while we were away, we had the sort of traditional British holiday food that you get, which is sort of chips and burgers and all those type of things. So, you know, I didn't really worry about it. I think that was the main thing. So, yeah, I enjoyed myself. Come back and...
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, started a new training program. I've started my off-season, my winter training program this week. So that's been good.
Yep.
So always when you start a new training program, you're a bit stiff and sore after the first couple of sessions, aren't you?
Yeah.
As your body kind of gets used to it. So I'm kind of hobbling around at the moment,
yeah.
Not being able to walk properly because, you know, I was doing sort of some heavy leg work the other day, and it's upset my rhythm a little bit, and I'm hobbling around the house. But but it's good, you know. It's that good feeling that you get when you've had a good training session. So I can't complain. But you've been playing, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. As some of the listeners might have heard, two shows ago we're on the brink of defeat. Well, we didn't like to think we would have lost yet, but we needed 280 to win, and we only ended up with about 110. So we really, in the end, got smashed.
Oh, that's quite bad.
But But I think our team came pretty well. Like, we responded pretty well in our next game. Well, we're only halfway through our next game, but we rolled out this current team for about 111.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, we were 100 for 1, so really need 12 runs to win in the day coming up. So we're gonna probably try and go for an outright win, which is really pretty good considering we came back from a thrashing. So I think our teams gelled really well. Even on the field in our second game, a lot of us were talking to each other, bringing each other up, and it was really good to see, because at the start of the season, our captain was sort of unsure about. Because there were two really different groups of people, even though we were all mates, and he wasn't sure if we would all get along, but it really gelled well together, so it was good to see.
You think you've got a good chance then, do you?
Yeah, well, we've played the strongest team so far, which we've thought would be the benchmark, and we think that if we play our best cricket, we could beat them, but we haven't really seen the other teams, because they might have gotten new players or something.
Okay.
But, yeah, we definitely have the players to pose a challenge.
Okay, well, we'll keep us updated with that, and we'll see how you get on.
Yeah, we'll do. Now, David, our theme this week is field settings, and I've been curious. As a keeper, I know they get a lot of input into field settings. Do you give a lot of input to your captain or suggest fields, and do you really have the best vision behind the stumps?
You definitely have the best point of view from behind the stumps, because you're standing almost next to the batsman when you're standing up to the stumps. So, you know, you can really get the angles right from that position. Most fielders at the level I play, they're not, you know, they know what they're doing in terms of, you know, they don't stand behind somebody else or anything like that. But sometimes you can just, you know, you can have a guy on the, like you've got a close fielder in front and you've got a standard fielder a little bit further back. You know, sometimes he can be on the wrong side. You know, he might be on the left of him when he should be on the right of him, or something like that. And you can just make those small adjustments.
Yeah, yeah.
And as long as the captain doesn't mind too much, and most captains don't, then you can do those without really having to say anything to the captain. But if I spot something in a batsman's technique, or maybe the way the bowler's bowling, maybe the bowler's getting a bit of swing, or it's moving off the seam, or, you know, something that maybe you wouldn't be able to see from mid-wicket or even mid-on or the slips, then I'll say to the captain, oh, you know, he's swinging it away, you know, perhaps we should put extra slip in or something like that. So, you know, I'm constantly making suggestions to the captain. I think the key is, for anyone who's making suggestions to the captain, is don't get offended if you make a suggestion and the captain completely ignores you. Because the captain's got to decide on those things, haven't they? So I'd just say, oh, you know, might it be a good idea to, you know, put in a short extra cover instead of having him orthodox because this guy's driving a little bit in the air? Well, okay.
Yeah.
The captain says, yeah, great idea, but then he doesn't do it. You know, I think some players can take offence that your suggestion has been rejected so thoroughly. But I'll just say something else. I just say, you know, oh, let's put a short leg in, or let's do this, let's do that. And it always comes from, you know, I'm always thinking about it. I won't just make a random suggestion. And if I haven't got anything to say, I won't make a suggestion. So, you know, I think that's important. And I think a good captain knows to, you know, listen to people's advice, but they also know that they don't have to take it all the time. They don't have to follow the advice all the time, because otherwise it's a bit of captaincy by committee then, isn't it? And the problem with that is that you don't have an overall view of what's going on, one person with an overall view of what's going on. So that's interesting. Yeah. Do you listen to the keeper when you're setting your field? Does the keeper ever come up to you and say, or have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, well, the keeper's actually a good mate of mine, and he probably knows my game best in the team. So I think his advice is usually most helpful for me. And he talks to the captain a lot when I'm bowling as well. So it really helps me because he knows my game a lot, and he helps the captain in suggesting ideas as well. So most of the times it really pays off.
What kind of field do you normally have?
Well, David, because I'm a natural in-swing bowler, I can't really bowl outswing for some reason unless it comes out wrong. Most of my fielders are on the leg side. So I have a square leg, a short mid-wicket most times. I have a fine leg, a mid-on, and sometimes I have someone at cow corner as well when they're really going for it. Mm. But the fielders on the offside are really limited. I mean, I do have a slip at the start, but usually I take that out after a few overs. I have a cover, a point, and a mid-off as well. So it's mainly leg side base because of my in-swing.
And do you ever sort of adjust that? Do you mess around with that sometimes and try different things?
Well, yeah, David, especially when we play new teams, I usually have a tactic where we have no one on the leg side. So we try and get players to play on the leg side, and I try and bowl cross seam, so it just comes out straight. So the batsman thinks that it's just going to come out straight, I'll play it wherever. But then all of a sudden, with no one on the leg side, I bowl my natural delivery, and it usually that's how I get my LBWs or bowls or something, because they try and play through the vacant leg side area, and they get out that way. So it can be a trap sometimes, but sometimes it can go horribly wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite risky, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends on the situation. I mean, if the team's really in front, then if I suggested that to my captain, he'd tell me to go back to my bowling mark. So, yeah, it depends on the situation, really.
Do you ever adjust your field to a particular type of batsman so that you know the batsman's hitting the ball in certain areas, so you make adjustments in that way?
To be honest, David, I let the captain usually decides. Well, if the batsman's really having a go in a certain area, the captain usually decides where he'd want his fielders. Because for me, I bowl to my fields.
Right.
I'm not really sort of fussy about where I want my fielders. So if I have no fielder there, I try and pitch it. If he's hitting it in cow corner, I try and pitch it more outside off. So it's going to be harder for him to hit it there. So I'm sort of that. Yeah, I try and bowl to my field as much as possible.
Okay, and you let the captain tinker around with it and you just get on with bowling.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of bowlers do.
Try and not muddle up.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of bowlers are quite happy to let the captain do that. And some bowlers are very particular. It's quite funny, aren't it? You know, some bowlers, you know, if they want a certain field, they don't want the captain messing around with it at all. So it's interesting. You get different types of personalities and different ways that it affects the bowler. You know, if the captain sort of overrules the bowler, he gets a bit stroppy and does something silly.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to know yourself. Maybe you just sort of think to yourself, you know, what if I was captain now, what changes would I make to this field? Maybe just thinking that to yourself, even if you don't do it. And then if the captain does it, and then you were thinking that at the same time, you think to yourself, oh, okay, I was right there.
Yeah.
And if the captain doesn't, if the captain does something else, or like the opposite of what you were thinking, then maybe you should think, oh, okay, maybe that wasn't right, the right choice in that particular moment. But it's good. I think it's good practice, and I think it gives you confidence, even if you're not the captain, to think, oh, okay, well, I'm thinking along the right lines because the captain made the same decision as me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, David, because you're a keeper here, you'd be really experienced in field settings, and we'd be able to answer the listeners' questions later on in the show. But first, we have Ian Pont, the fast bowling guru, who's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, and he's here again with a fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what Ian has to say for us this week.
Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
Hi, David.
You're well known for spotting talent. What is talent, and how do you spot it?
Crikey, that's an interesting question. Talent is obviously a potential that some cricketers have. I mean, I don't have the luxury of seeing people play in matches very often. What I do is I see them in the nets. Now, that doesn't mean... And we also know that there's certain people that look good in the nets but are absolutely clearly awful in the middle. I mean, it doesn't mean just because somebody looks good in the nets, they're a good player. But what nets show me as a coach is it shows me technique. And it's something that Jeff Boycott's been banging on about since he stopped playing, was about you've got to have a good technique to play. And I agree with him. And the same is true for bowlers as well. So for me to identify talent is I never look in the scorebook. That tells you nothing. That just tells you how many runs you've scored. And if you're going to pick a team from the scorebook, you're the worst kind of manager or coach of all time, because that only tells part of the story. We ultimately get judged on outcomes. And clearly, over a whole season, someone who's averaging 60, who's batted 30 times, is likely to be better than someone who averages 10, having batted 30 times. That's a given. But we're talking about identifying talent, and identifying talent implies you're identifying potential for the future, not someone who's already scoring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And how you identify talent is you have to look at the way people set themselves up if they're batting, what shape of shots they have, where they hit the ball, the choices they make, are they applying their skills correctly, are they tactically aware? All of those things I'm looking at for a young player, whether they're batting or bowling. You know, are they bowling in the right areas? Can they string six balls together? Can they build pressure as a bowler? Can they construct an over? Have they got variations? All that kind of stuff. Now, a lot of that comes from the way they bowl. If they're falling away at the crease or they've got a bad action, it's a mixed action, the run-up's not very good, the likelihood is that person, even though their stats from the season might be good, they've probably got a glass ceiling, because they're not going to go much further up the food chain with a very poor action if they're bowlers. You don't see, for example, in first-class cricket, people with terrible bowling actions. In the same way, you wouldn't see a top-order batsman with a rotten technique. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You see a lot of it at club level. But equally, you wouldn't see an Alistair Cook-type batsman playing club cricket week in, week out, and not being good enough to go any further. So what I'm saying is, we're looking for shapes, we're looking for technique, and we're looking for application of all of those things. And as a person that develops talent and identifies it, that's really what I'm looking for. I mean, I do pride myself, David. I'm going to big myself up slightly here. I pride myself on being able to see a bowler bowl six balls or a batter hit six balls, and I could tell you whether they've probably got a future in the game. It doesn't mean they haven't if they can't hit it properly, because you can always learn those things. But we're talking about talent ID. There's definitely something about the shape of the way a player hits a cricket ball that you can tell whether he's got something or not. You can learn lots and lots of things. What is difficult to learn is natural coordination and a good eye. And if someone has got those things, you can build the rest around it. Someone like, if I want to pick out a player from world cricket, someone like Gary Kirsten, played 101 test matches for South Africa. He would be the very first person to admit he wasn't the most talented player, but he learned how to bat. And that is all about technique, and that's really what you're looking for as a coach.
Thanks, Ian, for your time. If you want coaching from Ian Pond, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's Actable Faster Coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Welcome to the listeners' questions section. And this week, we talk about field settings. David, our first question is from Jason, and he says, I'm a 15-year-old fast bowler, and I have no idea how to set my field. Can you help me work out how to do it? And David, Jason sounds young, and he's 15 years old. Would you recommend sort of a standard fast bowling field? So maybe one or two slips, a gully, point, and usually just a normal field, and then maybe adjust it to however he's bowling?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. A good place to start is to look at the kind of orthodox fields that you see for the type of bowler that you are. And, you know, you can see those in, you know, on the telly, or, you know, in, you can buy books, or even look on My Cricket Coach at pitchvision.com to see the type of fields that a bowler of your standard would have in the types of games that you're playing. I mean, we don't know what type of games he plays, and we don't know what level he plays. But it's good that he's asking the question. I think it's a really good thing that he's asking the question, because you know, a lot of bowlers don't think about it, and they just let the captain set the field. And I don't think that's right. You should know yourself. Yep. You should know your own game more than anybody else, more than the captain even. So, although the captain has the final say. So, look at the orthodox fields. And what you'll find with the orthodox fields is that the fielders, it seems obvious to say, but the fielders are in the place where the ball is most likely to go. So if you're opening the bowling on a quick pitch, you know, you've got a new ball in your hand, then, you know, you're going to have slips and gullies and fielders behind square on the offside for the edge that you're hopefully going to get when the ball swings, for example. Yeah. So it's mostly kind of just advanced common sense, I would say. Where's the ball most likely to go? I would say that there's three things you have to take into account where the ball's likely to go. The first thing is yourself as the bowler, how fast you are, how accurate you are, whether you bowl in swing or out swing, whether you move the ball off the seam, are you a spinner, etc., etc. The second thing is the batsman. Yeah. What kind of shots is the batsman playing? Unless you're playing at a very high level, most batsmen are limited in the number of shots that they've got, and they'll look to play their favourite shots first. So you might want to say cut off the batsman's favourite shot as quickly as possible so he can't play it. So he's having to play shots he's not very comfortable with. And then the last thing would be the condition. So how the pitch is playing, what the weather's like, all the rest of it. So those three things, that you have to take all those three into account. And then you look at, say, the orthodox field, which, say, for an away swing bowler, and it's a 2-day match, you might have three slips, a gully. Yep. If it's a quick pitch, you might have a short leg, third man, mid-on cover and mid-wicket. So you might have a mid-off, for example. You might want to take one of the slips and put him at mid-off.
Yeah.
If you're an in-swing bowler like yourself, Kevin, then maybe you'd have more men on the leg side. Maybe you'd have maybe you'd have two short legs, or a short leg and a leg gully, for example, because the ball's more likely to go on the leg side, but you still want to have a close catcher in there. So, you know, you're flexible, and you should always be thinking about where the ball is likely to go and then where the ball is actually going. If it's going in a different place to where you think it's likely to go, then you have to adjust your field slightly to account for that.
All right, David, our next question is from Shane, and he says, I'm always arguing with a senior bowler in my team. He bowls very accurate outswing at a decent pace, but says he doesn't feel right without a mid-off. What can I do to convince him to put in an extra close catcher? Now, David, I know the first thing about a bowler is if he doesn't have a fielder where he feels comfortable, he's not going to bowl to his best. So if he feels comfortable with a mid-off, and if you take that mid-off out, he won't bowl to his best, and maybe his line and length would go wrong, and things could go horribly wrong. What do you reckon, David?
Yeah, you get this quite a lot. You have these kind of safety blanket positions which whether or not a bowler actually needs them, then they feel they can't bowl properly without them. I mean, for example, this bowler here might feel like he can't pitch the ball up if he hasn't got a mid-off, because that mid-off gives him the protection against the straight drive, which is fair enough. So you may have to take a slip from somewhere else, or you may have to just cope with two slips and maybe spread them out a little bit. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Kevin. There are certain things which are psychological about field settings, and it's not just down to, you know, the maths of it. You know, the angle of the ball coming off the bat. Sometimes it's about what's going on in the head of the bowler, and also what's going on in the head of the batsman. But we're talking about the bowler here. So if you insist on taking out the mid off and putting an extra slip in, and then he feels he can't pitch the ball up anymore, so he's sort of banging in short of a length, the ball's not swinging, he's bowling a few long hops as well, he's getting hit through mid-wicket for four all the time because he's bowling too short and he's getting pulled all the time, then nobody wins there. So you're better off going with what the bowler says. If you're captain, you're better off going with what the bowler says. And maybe over time, you can sort of convince him to put in the extra close catcher for an over or something, just to see what happens. But in the short run, it's better just to, those safety blanket type positions, it's better just to give in and say, yep, sure, have that fielder there, even if you know that, you know, in your heart of hearts, it's never going to go there. You know, he a left arm spinner and he wants a square leg. Well, you know, a left arm spinner to a right arm batsman, it's not going to go square leg very often, but you know, maybe he wants one there, so stick someone there and forget about it as a captain, I'd say.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that field placings can be as much psychological as they can tactical. I think that's quite an interesting point, because you wouldn't think they were like that, but there's certain situations where they definitely are.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's even used as a psychological weapon against batsmen. I mean, when a fast bowler comes in, they immediately, sometimes they put fielders behind the bat, so fine leg, short legs, just to make the batsman think that there's a bouncer or a short ball barrage coming up, but instead the big Yorker comes up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah, putting men out on the rope and then bowling a Yorker.
Well, David, our next question is from Jackie, and he says, what field do you think is best for left-arm finger spinners? I'm not experienced in left-arm finger spinning, David, so you're going to have to answer this one.
Well, it's quite an interesting one, left-arm spinners, because they turn the ball away from the right-hander, you know, assuming you're bowling to a right-hander, that means the angle will, if the batsman's playing properly, the angle will sort of make the batsman play into the offside, because you won't want to play against the spin into the leg side.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, if you're a left-arm spinner, you'll want six fielders on the offside, because if you have less than six on the offside, then you're opening yourself up to a gap somewhere where the batsman's very likely to hit it, and you don't really want a gap there if you can help it at all.
Yeah.
So you want six on the offside, three on the leg side. Then the interesting part is that, especially in club cricket, you're going to get the guy who's trying to smash it across the line all the time. So what do you do in that situation? You know, you're there bowling your wily left arm spin. It's coming out of the hand properly, turning away from the bat, and the orthodox batsman's pushing it into the covers and not getting any runs because you've stacked the covers full of fielders. And then some blacksmith comes out and starts mowing across the line and sending it over cow corner. What do you do in that situation? Well, you can come around the wicket, do the modified Ashley Giles method of bowling over the wicket and aiming much straighter at the stumps and not trying to turn it as much.
Yeah.
And then having more fielders on the leg side, you can do that. That's a sensible tactic if you've got a guy trying to smash it into the leg side all the time. In fact, you might even sort of put seven men on the leg side and bowl at leg stump. You know, why not?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. I would say just to answer the question properly, I would have a if we're talking about not necessarily a limited overs game, but you know, a game where you have to bowl the opposition out, I would go for a slip, a gully, and short cover or short or silly point as your close fielders, and then your outfielders. I'd have a point, cover, mid on, mid off, mid wicket, and someone sort of behind square on the leg side for the sweep.
Yeah.
So that would be my field. You might want to adjust that somewhat if you're talking about limited overs. In limited overs, you'd probably want sort of more men on the fence. You'd still have your six on the you still have your six on the offside, but you probably lose the close catches, and sort of maybe have have an offside sweeper, and then you know four men in the ring on the offside, two men on the boundary on the offside, and then on the leg side, a couple of men on the boundary on the leg side for the slog, and someone in close,
yep,
mid wicket kind of area. You are missing someone defending against the sweep then, but it depends if the batsman's got the sweep shot, you know, because we're not talking about first class cricketers, so he may not have the sweep shot. If he has got the sweep shot, you might have to move one of the boundary fielders on the leg side in to protect against that.
All right, David, we have a question from Sun. Now, Sun has a problem in limited over games, David, where he has a problem with the third man area in particular. And he says, as I see it, you need three fielders in that area to the fast bowlers. Fine third man, cover point, and short third man to cut off the singles. But that means less fielders on the leg side, and so a free hit to the batsman. What should I do?
Do you play much limited overs cricket? Do you have that problem?
We have about three limited over games in a year, David. So we don't see the problem as much because we don't play much of it. So people still play defensive in those games.
Okay. Well, yeah, there isn't really an easy answer. I mean, we're talking about when the batsmen are playing in a less orthodox way, you know, maybe towards the end of an innings or something like that. So the ball does go in that area a lot. So, yeah, you've got to cut off the boundaries. So you want someone down there on the boundary at third man, but you also want to cut off the singles, yeah. So you want a short third man as well, and then you want someone somewhere in the area square of the wicket to cut off the cuts and square drives, yeah. So you know that does three men in a very close area there can cause a problem because you've got a gap somewhere else. I'd say you could take the risk. You know, you could take out one of those fielders and take the risk with it. That's what they do in sort of international cricket. They tend to bring third man up inside the ring and cross their fingers that the batsman can't work it down to third man for four. But often they do, don't they? They do those little reverse sweeps or sort of deliberate late cuts and edges down to that area. So if you're going to go with two men there, then you probably want to bowl a bit straighter, a bit more at the stumps, and have more men on the leg side for the sort of hit across the line. Or the other thing you can do is you can have those three men there, and you can sort of bowl as wide outside the off stump as you dare. And so it's that sort of forcing the batsman to play into the offside then. So, there's no easy answer to that. You've only got nine fielders once you take out the bowler and the wicketkeeper. So, you know, you've got to put them somewhere. You can't put them everywhere. And that's one of the most difficult decisions that you have to make as a bowler or a captain, what to do with that area sort of between, you know, the wicketkeeper and point. Because you can't, if you cover all the bases, then you're going to have a hole somewhere else.
Perfect, David. Well, our next question is from Malcolm. And Malcolm has a similar question about limited over games, David. And he asks, how attacking should fields be in limited over games? And David, are there periods in limited over games where fields should be attacking? So say the first couple of overs, say in a 50-over game, first 15 to 20 overs should be attacking, whereas everything else should be sort of defensive?
Yes and no. I mean, generally speaking, the idea in limited overs cricket in the field is to keep the opposition score as low as possible. So, yeah. You, in theory, you don't need to take wickets at all. All you need to do is just keep the run rate down to so they score one less run than you do. As long as they score one less run than you do, then you win.
Yeah.
So, it's a bit more simple than having to bowl the opposition out. However, yeah. One of the best ways to keep the run rate down, as the cliche goes, is to take wickets. So, how much do you much do you attack? As you say, the best time to take wickets in limited over the game is early on. Even if you've got sort of power plays and all that kind of thing, which you don't always have in club limited overs games. But if you've got some kind of fielding restriction and the field is up, then the batsmen are playing their shots. The ball's quite new, so it might be swinging around a bit if conditions are in your favour. So a good time to attack is early on. But you don't want to attack as if you were playing a game, a longer format game, you know, or a time game or something like that. Because that leaves too many gaps. So you're going to risk getting smashed around because the batsmen have got a more attacking mentality in the limited overs games. So yeah, you might want a couple of slips early on, but you wouldn't keep that for very long, especially if the batsmen are scoring quickly. You'd want to sort of get the field out as quickly as possible. The only other time that you would want to sort of have an attacking field, if you like, would be if you had a new batsman coming in and you wanted to put him under a bit of pressure. So again, you wouldn't go mad, you know, you wouldn't want to suddenly have three slips and, you know, two gullies and all that kind of thing. But say a new batsman comes in and the team are under a little bit of pressure and you've got the spinner on, then you might throw someone in at sort of silly mid on or something or short cover or, you know, someone close in to just put that batsman under that little bit more pressure, get in his eye line and make a mistake. And they do make mistakes. Yeah. You know, you're nervous when you come in. You see the fielder in close and you think, oh, I don't want to hit the ball to him. And you end up playing and missing and getting bowled or nicking off or something. So,
yeah,
you know, you might want to throw a close fielder in those situations. But in most circumstances, you would go as defensive as possible as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Although, when I say defensive, it doesn't necessarily mean throwing as many fielders out onto the boundaries straight away, because it's a classic mistake, especially at the top level, it's a classic mistake to go automatically think, right, I must have the field as defensive as possible, have as many fielders out on the boundaries as I'm allowed, and then put all my close fielders on the edge of the ring. And if it's a 30-yard ring, then you're just giving one run to the batsman every time, because they can just hit the ball to the fielder and run. Because 30 yards, you can't get it back. So in a situation like that, if you're trying to sort of squeeze the opposition a little bit, then maybe you want a couple more fielders in the ring and you want them genuinely saving one. Now, you wouldn't want to do that if a batsman is booming the ball about all over the place and hitting boundaries for fun. But if a side are trying to keep up with the run rate and just managing to do it and knocking and nurdling the ball around a little bit, or they're a bit behind the rate, then you can add a lot of pressure by having close fielders in, saving the one, feeling like the batsmen are squeezed and, you know, they feel like they need to hit a boundary. They can't pierce the infield and the pressure builds and they make a mistake. And that's how you get wickets in limited overs cricket, especially after the first few overs. You get wickets by keeping the run rate as low as possible and forcing the batsman to play a shot that he doesn't want to play. And then he gets himself out because he's getting frustrated. So,
That's right.
So to answer the question, you want the field as defensive as possible, as quickly as possible. But there are certain circumstances when you can squeeze a batsman out, or even have some attacking fielders if you pick the right time to put them in.
Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 2nd of October, with the theme being improving your confidence. And so if you have any questions or feedback to add to that, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampath.
and this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.